before his death. It was all she had left to call upon. It was what she would have to employ if she was to have any chance at all of saving Penn. She went still inside as she measured herself for the task she was about to undertake. She had studied hard the skills that Aaron felt she should master. He had given her so little, their time was too short for more. But what he had given her would have to be enough. Most of what she could call upon relied on her ability to concentrate and to center herself. She had worked hard during the voyage to Anachery to become accomplished at both. She would put it to the test. Gathering her resolve, she rose, moved over to the side of the airship, and looked down. The yard directly below her was empty. She went over the side quickly, down the rope ladder, and onto the ground, not bothering to hide her descent or even her presence. Subtlety would not serve her well just then. The key to her success lay in boldness. She stood at the bottom of the ladder, looking around for the gnome guards. Still wrapped and hooded by the cloak she had stolen earlier, at a distance she could pass for one of them. It was her best chance. She picked out the guards in the darkness, then started toward the window-lit walls of the keep, as if it made no difference to her whether they were there or not. Darkness served her purpose well. She was shadowed for much of the way by the hulls of the airships, and then the walls of the parapets and buildings. She was just another solitary figure crossing the yard, no different in appearance from the others. One of the guards glanced her way as she advanced toward the doors she had spied ahead, but he made no attempt to challenge her. When another turned toward her in the making of his rounds, she released a quick bit of magic to create an unexpected noise behind him, causing him to turn back again. In the windows ahead, shadows passed through the light, their appearance unexpected and startling. She felt her throat tighten, but did not slow. "Keep going," she told herself. She reached the doorway after what seemed an interminable length of time, pulled down on the handle to release the latch, and stepped inside. A large anteroom, its ceiling cavernous and smoky with torchburn, its walls hung with heraldic pennants, opened into three long corridors that stretched away through pools of torchlight and layered shadows to lines of closed doors, high windows, and dark alcoves. She started forward and stopped. A pair of gnome hunters stood to either side of her, neither more than a dozen paces away, armed and gimlet-eyed, as they watched her freeze in place. She had no time to think and only a moment to react. She threw back the hood to her cloak and fastened the one on the right with the dark glare. "Where have they taken him?" The question was asked in Elfish, a language with which she did not think he would be familiar. She was right. He stared blankly at her, a hint of surprise shadowing his sharp features. "The boy," she snapped, speaking now in Callahorn's tongue, a Southland dialect everyone in the Borderlands spoke, accommodating him in a way that would demonstrate her superiority. "Where is he?" She shifted her gaze quickly from the first gnome to the second, her impatience evident, her sense of command clear. She radiated what she hoped was druid authority, giving clear indication that as a member of the Order, she was where she belonged and had a right to ask the questions she was asking. There was no reason to doubt her. All that was required was a quick, concise response. Not surprisingly, the gnomes had trouble supplying one.
"The cells, I think," the second gnome told her in the Southland dialect.
He said something to the other in gnomish, but his companions simply shrugged.
"Yes, the cells, to be held until the Ard Reese returns."
She nodded perfunctorily, and marched past them down the central corridor, acting as if she knew exactly what she was doing, when in fact she had no idea at all.
The cells.
Where were the cells? Below ground somewhere? She couldn't ask that, not of these guards. Someone else, maybe. She was inside, and she had a destination, and that was going to have to be enough.
a handful of doors farther down the corridor. She stepped into a deeply shadowed alcove and stood breathing hard with her back against the rough wall, her mind racing. Aaron would have known what to do next if he were there. She must try to think the way Aaron would. She squeezed her eyes shut against the pain that thinking of him caused her, then opened them quickly, determined not to give way. The mechanics were easy. She needed to find her way to the cells. To do that, she needed to find someone to tell her how. She brushed at her short-cropped dark hair, squared her shoulders, then stepped back out into the corridor and began walking deeper into the keep. Empty of life, the passageway tunneled ahead, her footsteps, soft echoes in the silence. She was aware that she still wore the gnome hunting cloak, and that it would eventually draw unwanted attention. Her first order of business was to replace it with a druid robe. But that was easier said than done. It wasn't as if there were robes hanging on hooks all up and down the hallway, druids wandering about from whom she might steal one. But she got lucky. At a juncture of corridors much deeper inside the keep, just as she was despairing that she might wander the halls of Paranor until sunrise, she came upon a study chamber with lights burning and druids at work. She paused, just outside the doorway, still within the corridor shadows, and peered inside. She could see three dark-cloaked forms, hoods thrown back, bodies hunched over books at tables, heads lowered in concentration. She stood for a time, trying to decide what to do next. But she couldn't think of anything that didn't involve going into the room for a closer look around. That was too dangerous. She hesitated, undecided, and as she did so, she felt a finger tap her shoulder. "Are you looking for someone?" That she didn't jump out of her skin entirely was something of a miracle. She even managed to turn around. A druid stood behind her, a questioning look on his scowling face. Bright green eyes peered out from under heavy, furrowed brows. A Southlander. She stared at him without speaking, her heart gone straight to her throat. "Sorry," he said, not sounding sorry at all. "Didn't mean to frighten you, but you look like you don't know what you're doing here." He rubbed his smooth chin, reflectively, then glanced at her robe and gave a disapproving frown. "Why are you wearing a gnome hunter's cloak? You know the rules?" She didn't, of course, but she nodded anyway. "I was working on the airships and wore the robe to keep from getting dirty. I forgot to take it off."
"Well, it's not allowed."
He glanced past her into the study room.
"Wait here."
He stepped inside, out of view, then returned a moment later and thrust a druid robe into her hands.
"Here, wear this until you can put on one of your own. The rules are clear."
She nodded her thanks, slipped off the gnome cloak, and slipped on the proffered robe.
"I've been away. I don't know all the new rules."
The druid looked suddenly eager.
"Did you come in one of those airships that just landed? Has something else happened?"
She hesitated. Something else? What was he talking about? "The airships brought in a boy," she said, deciding to measure his reaction.
"Ah, the Olmsford boy." The druid shook his head. "What a lot of bother. They've been looking for him for weeks, nephew to the old Ard Rhys. They think the whole family is at risk, so they're bringing them here to keep them safe. Found the parents, but they couldn't find the boy. Until now."
"So the parents are here?" she tried.
"No, no. That's what I was talking about. They're gone. Disappeared with their ship 2 days ago. Flew off in something of a confrontation, I hear. Hard to say. The gnomes won't talk about it with us. But there was a fight of some sort. No one knows. Shadea keeps such things secret from everyone but her closest advisers." He shrugged. "Typical."
Kyber took a deep breath.
"Do you think she would be awake this late? I need to see her."
The druid shook his head.
"You don't know much about what's going on, do you? She isn't even here. She went to Arashag and hasn't returned."
"As I said, I've been away," Kaiba repeated. All this is news to me. She had learned all she was going to learn, and more than she had expected. She had to break this off. Who would I speak to in her absence? The druid frowned.
I don't know. Trant Rowan or Pison Wentz, I suppose.
Didn't you fly in with them? How did you get here?
The disapproving frown was back.
Where did you say you had been?
But she was already moving away, giving him a perfunctory wave as she did so. She couldn't believe her luck. She knew now that the ringleader of the conspirators was away, so Penn would not be touched until she returned. That gave her a small measure of time in which to act. She also knew that Penn's parents were no longer prisoners in the keep, so that the boy, if she could free him, would be able to go into the Forbidding without fear of reprisal against his captive family. But she had to find Penn quickly if he was to have his chance.
Wait up! Stay where you are!
She wheeled about, astonished to find the druid she had thought left behind, chasing after her down the corridor, black robes flying out behind him. One arm came up as if in challenge, a sense of urgency to the motion, his heavy brow furrowed more deeply than ever. Having no choice but to deal with him, she stood her ground.
Who did you say you were?
He demanded, panting and out of breath as he reached her.
How is it that you happen to have been aboard an airship bringing back the Ohmsford boy when—
Kyber braced her feet, cocked her fist, and hit him so hard she knocked him backwards into the wall. She was on him instantly, hauling him up with one hand while putting a dagger to his throat with the other.
Not another word, she hissed at him. Not unless I tell you to speak. If you yell for help, I'll cut you chin to navel before you finish. Do you understand me?
She had never seen such fear in another's eyes as she saw in his. His throat worked as he tried unsuccessfully to speak, and finally settled for nodding.
You don't know who I am, and you don't want to, she told him softly,
her eyes locking on his, making sure he did not misjudge her determination.
Behave yourself. Do what you're told, and you might stay alive. Now listen carefully. I want you to take me down to the cells where they keep the prisoners. Don't speak to anyone we pass on the way. Don't try signaling for help. Am I clear?
She was only a girl, but the druid she held pinned against the wall saw her as infinitely more dangerous than he was, and he nodded vigorously.
One thing more, she said to him. I have the use of magic just as you do. I understand its complexities. If you try to use your own, even secretly, I will know.
He found his voice again.
You've come for the Ohmsford boy.
She put her face inches from his own.
He means a lot to me. So much so that if something bad happens to him now, something much worse will happen to you.
What I intend for him is safe passage out of here. If you interfere with me, I will kill you. His face was bloodless, his eyes wide.
Don't hurt me.
I won't if you don't make me.
Now, which way? He pointed, his hand shaking. She pulled him away from the wall and marched him back down the cavernous hall, the dagger at his back, her free hand gripping his arm. They moved quickly, following the corridor to its end, turned into another, followed that for a time, then turned into a third. They passed no one on their way. They heard no movements or voices that would indicate the presence of others. What she was doing was madness, an impulsive act that could end badly for her, but at least she was getting to where she wanted to go. Someone would have had to tell her, and it might as well be someone under her control. Her eyes darted left and right as she walked, to every crevice and alcove, to every closed door. She kept waiting for her luck to run out. She kept waiting for things to go bad. They reached a broad stairwell leading down, and her prisoner hesitated.
Keep moving,
she whispered, nudging him with the tip of the dagger. They descended carefully. Kyber, watching the bend in the wall ahead for shadows cast by torchlight, none appeared.
At the bottom of the stairwell, they reached an anteroom that served as a hub for 5 different corridors leading off like the spokes of a wheel. A gnome hunter sat facing them from behind a table, his wizened face unreadable. Farther down the corridor at his back, torchlight cast the shadow of a second guard against the stone block wall. Keeping one hand firmly attached to her reluctant companion, Kyber moved over to the gnome at the table. "We've been sent to speak with the boy," she said, again using the Callahorn dialect. "Where is he?" The gnome hunter stared at her, clearly surprised by her demand. Then he shook his head.
"No one sees him. I have my orders."
"Orders from Trant Rowan?" she snapped. "Who do you think sent us here? Now take us to the boy, or do you want me to drag him down here and tell you for himself?" The threat cut off whatever reply the gnome was about to make, and he simply nodded.
"Someone should tell me these things. I can't know them otherwise."
He paused.
"You just want to speak with the boy?"
She shrugged dismissively. "He won't be leaving his cell if that's what you are asking." He rose, doubtfully, reached under the table to produce a ring of keys, and led them down the hallway. Kyber felt the beginnings of some resistance on the part of her reluctant companion, and shoved him ahead.
"Don't," she whispered, the dagger digging into his back so hard he whimpered.
They passed the second guard on his way back. He glanced at Kyber and her companion without interest and moved on. She fought the urge to look over her shoulder at him when he was out of sight. Instead, she pulled the dagger away from the druid and close to her body so that it was hidden in her robes, still keeping the fingers of her other hand tightly fastened to her prisoner's arm. She did not know how much longer she could hold him in check. Sooner or later, he was going to give way to his growing panic or to the temptation to run. If it happened now, while she was still out in the corridor with the gnome hunters, she was in trouble. Her plan to free Penn, born of opportunity and chance, was just beginning to take shape. She needed time to flesh it out, to think it through, to find a way to implement it fully. Getting to Penn was just the first step. The ones that followed would be much harder. They reached the door of the cell, and the gnome hunter turned.
"You want me to wait?"
She scowled. "I want you to go back to doing what you are paid to do, and leave me to my work. I'll call you when I need you."
"I have to lock you in."
"Then do so. You are wasting my time." The gnome fiddled with the keys, slipped one clear of the others, inserted it into the lock, and turned it. The lock clicked, and the door opened with a squeal of metal fastenings. As it did so, Kyber's prisoner wrenched free of her grip and ran screaming down the hall. Chapter 9. Kyber didn't stop to think, didn't do anything but respond to the disaster that was unfolding. She wheeled on the gnome nearest, slammed the hilt of her dagger into his temple, and dropped him without a sound. As he collapsed, she turned back toward the fleeing druid, her hands weaving, conjuring a magic with which she was familiar and on which she had depended before. In response to her summons, a sudden gust of wind exploded down the hallway, caught up her quarry before he had run a dozen yards, snatched him off his feet, and hurled him into the wall like a sack of wheat. The remaining gnome hunter came racing toward her in response to the shouting and tumbling bodies, his weapons drawn. She used her magic again, picking him up off his feet and bearing him aloft as she had once done a simple leaf. Remembering to focus her efforts, she held him suspended in midair, kicking and squirming in a futile effort to break free. No failure of attention, no break in concentration. She was at her best in that moment, her uncle's attentive student in the way he had always wanted her to be. She reached the gnome and dropped him to the floor in a ragged heap, kicking him so hard in the head that he did not move again. Glancing back at the door to the cell, she called out, "Penn, are you in there? Answer me!" No response. Returning her attention to the bodies crumpled about her, she used laces, bindings, and belts to secure them, then dragged them back up the hall and dropped them next to the gnome with the keys. Peering inside the cell, she saw a bundled form lying at the back of the tiny room, trussed, gagged, and blindfolded.
"Shades!"
she hissed under her breath. She rushed into the room, bent to Pen Ormsford, and began working to release his bonds. She freed his eyes first, looking to see if he was conscious. He blinked into the uncertain light and stared at her wide-eyed. She grinned in response, then loosened the gag.
"I guess you didn't expect to see me again so soon, did you, Pendaren?
Kyber! How did you find me?" The obvious relief mirrored in his boyish features made her smile broaden. "I saw what happened, slipped aboard one of the other airships, and flew into Paranor with you. Are you hurt?"
He shook his head. "Just get me free. I'll tell you everything."
She did so, using the dagger to cut through his bonds, then told him to wait while she hauled her three captives inside the cell and dumped them in a far corner. None of them moved even once while this was happening.
"Let's see how they like being locked away in here," she muttered. "Come on, Pen."
"Help me walk, Kyber," he asked, struggling to rise. They went out of the cell as quickly as his legs would permit, but his mobility was severely restricted by leg cramps and stiffness. He had been bound up in the airship for much of the flight back, then brought directly to the cell and left as he was. He had lost all the feeling in both legs and feet in that time, and it was slow to return. "I thought I was finished," he admitted, as he limped down the corridor, leaning heavily on her for support.
"They caught me out, Kyber. I told them lies about what I was doing, but they saw through me and took the dark wand away. You saw that I had it, didn't you, from across the ravine? I took it with me from the Tanaquil's lair, kept it from that thing that tracked us from Anachery to Stridegate, kept it safe to use as I was instructed by the King of the Silver River, and they took it away."
He was so distraught that he was practically crying. Kyber gave his shoulders a rough squeeze.
"Then we'll just have to get it back, Pen."
They reached the end of the corridor, and she lowered the boy into the chair formerly occupied by the gnome jailer, kneeling before him to rub some life back into his legs.
"Now, tell it all to me," she said.
He did, beginning with his crossing to the island of the Tanaquil with Cinnaminson, and his efforts to communicate with the tree, and hers to form a bond with the Aeriads. He continued by describing his ordeal in gaining possession of the Dark Wand from Father Tanaquil, Cinnaminson's seduction by the Aeriads, his futile efforts to free her from the tree roots of Mother Tanaquil, and his battle with the creature from Anachery. Finally, he explained how he had decided to surrender to the druids, both to help his captive friends and to reach Paranor, where he could use the Dark Wand at last to go into the Forbidding.
"I thought I could do it, Kyber. I thought they wouldn't know what the staff was, even if they took it from me. I was stupid. They knew it to be a talisman at once. They pretended ignorance, then mocked me for my foolishness."
"We will live to see them mocked for their own foolishness," she muttered, still rubbing his leg muscles.
"Any better?"
He nodded.
"I didn't know what had happened to you, except that I knew you were free. I thought you would be able to help Tagwin and Kermadec and the rest, even if the druids took me. I never thought you would come after me."
"Let's hope the druids were fooled, too. I don't think they know I'm here yet, but they will soon enough. Someone is bound to come looking to see how things stand, or for a change of guards. We have to get moving right now. Can you stand?"
She helped him to his feet, where he took a moment to stretch his legs and stamp his feet.
"That's better. The feeling's back." His face was drawn and weary, but determined as well.
"Trant Rowan says Shadea will be back late tomorrow. I have time to get into the Forbidding before she does."
The elven girl brushed back her short-cropped hair and grimaced. She had only been told by the druid that Shadea was away.
"There are a lot of others we have to worry about in her absence, though. so we don't want to get complacent. What is it you have to do, Pen?
He moved close, then put his hand on her shoulder to steady himself. Two things. I have to get the dark wand back from Trant Rowan, and then I must get inside the chamber of the Ard Ris in order to enter the forbidding. It shouldn't be too hard, except that I don't know how the magic of the dark wand works.
She exhaled heavily.
It sounds pretty hard to me. Which part do you view as being easy?
No, no, you don't understand. Now that I'm free, things are much easier. I can get to the Dark Wand and to the Chamber of the Ard Ris. I know I can do that much, especially with you to help me.
He grinned at the consternation that registered on her sharp features.
Really, I can. Listen a moment. Something happened in the shaping of the Dark Wand, or maybe even before, when the tree broke off its limb and took my fingers, but certainly by the time I was done carving its runes into the wood. There was a joining of sorts, a binding of the staff to me. I didn't know about it at first. I didn't realize what it was, but I do now. I am connected to the Dark Wand in the same way I am connected to the parts of my own body. I can feel its presence. I can feel its responses to my needs.
She shook her head.
I don't know about this, Pen. You're talking about a wooden staff.
I know where it is right now, he said, cutting her short. I knew it as soon as they took it away from me and brought me down here. The runes are like a voice in my head calling to me. They want me to find the staff. No matter where the druids take it or how hard they try to hide it, the runes will tell me how to find it. I will always know where it is. All I have to do is follow its voice.
She wanted to say something about the reliability of voices in your head, but she forced herself to accept that what he was saying might be true. There had to be some kind of special connection between the boy and the staff, or he wouldn't have been summoned to receive it in the first place.
So, you can go right to it now that you're free? She pressed.
I can.
And then take it to the Chamber of the Ard Ris, where she went into the Forbidding, and figure out how to go in after her?
Kyber gripped his face in both of her hands and squeezed.
This doesn't sound easy at all.
We're inside Paranor, and every druid in the keep is looking for you, or will be soon. We have no friends here, Pendaren. We have no allies, only enemies and potential enemies. We have no magic that counts. I can use the elf stones once we're backed into a corner and it doesn't matter anymore, but by then we're probably done for.
We can do it, Kyber, he answered softly.
She stared into his eyes.
I think you believe that, she said.
She shook her head and sighed.
In any case, what does it matter? We both know we're going to try. That is what we have been given to do, and all we have left to do, unless we try to go back to homes that aren't even ours anymore.
His enthusiasm faded suddenly. My parents. What about my parents? The druids still have them.
As a matter of fact, they don't. Your parents fled or escaped or whatever, but they're gone. I got that information from the druid who brought me down here, so you don't have to worry about them.
His smile returned.
Then this is going to work.
I know it.
She wanted to tell him that he was right, that it would, but it was a stretch to accept that all the steps he must take to reach Grianne Olmsford and return with her would be the right ones, and none missteps that would doom them both. He saw things in simple terms, in the terms of a boy who believed everything was still possible and no reach too great. She knew better. She had a stronger sense of the possible than he did, and that made her cautious of embracing rarefied hopes too warmly. She took her hands away from his shoulders and tucked them into her robes.
Let's give it a try, Pendaren, she said.
Outfitted in druids' robes, with weapons concealed and hoods pulled over their heads to shadow their faces,
They went back up the stone stairwell to the upper corridors of Paranor. If Kyber had read the position of the stars correctly, it would be dawn in a few hours. She felt strongly that they had to complete their efforts by sunrise if they were to have any chance of succeeding. Once it grew light, they would have to hide. By the time it was dark again, everyone in the keep would know that Penn was free and be looking for him. There would be little chance of succeeding after that. Not that there was all that much chance of succeeding now. She tried not to be negative in her thinking, but the odds against them were so enormous that she could not help herself. She reminded herself that the odds had been enormous from the beginning, and yet the two of them were still moving ahead, however slowly, still working their way toward their goal. They had lost good friends and strong allies, but even that hadn't been enough to stop them. She must take heart from that. She had come a long way from her forbidden druid studies with her uncle in Embrun, and a longer way still from her rarefied life as an Elessadil princess in Arbalon. She could barely remember what the latter had been like. Her worries at the prospect of being married off on a whim of her father, or brother, seemed to belong to another person altogether. She was so far removed from that time, so distanced from it by the events of the past few weeks, that it might never have existed, and might not ever exist again given her present situation. She felt a moment of panic and fought to contain it. Uncle Aaron would calm her if he were there. He would tell her not to think beyond the moment, but to confront what frightened her and bring it under control. She tried doing that, isolating the source of her fear and putting it aside. But it was hard to give it a name or even a shape. Her fear was for something too large and too amorphous to define, an overwhelming sense of smallness and weakness and inexperience in the face of a tidal wave of power and dark intent. She might thrash and struggle. She might try whatever she could to break free of its grip. But in the end, it would have her anyway.
"We need to go farther up," Penn whispered suddenly, clutching at her arm, breaking the chains of the spell.
She gasped at his unexpected touch, caught her breath, then nodded quickly to conceal her shock.
"Farther up," she repeated.
She glanced around, surprised to discover that they had reached the top of the stairs. The corridor ahead stretched away into pools of torchlight and layered shadows, the silence as thick as cotton wadding.
"Can you show me?"
He pointed diagonally upward into the darkness of the passageway, then looked back at her expectantly, excitement dancing in his eyes. He was enjoying himself. He wasn't even thinking about the danger, or if he was, he was discounting it in favor of his strong expectations for achieving the quest given him by the King of the Silver River. The realization made her smile inwardly, although she kept her face expressionless as she motioned for him to lead the way. They walked down the passageway swiftly and silently, listening for voices or footfalls, but hearing neither. Kyber was back to worrying about how they would regain the dark wand if they encountered any resistance. She would use her small druid magic if she was forced to, but stealth and secrecy were better allies for as long as they could call on them for help. If they could get as far as the chamber of the Ard Ris without being discovered, they had a reasonable chance of getting Penn through to the Forbidding, whether or not he knew how to use the magic of the staff, because such magic would reveal itself when it was time. It was in the nature of most magic to do so, and there was no reason to think it would be any different now. And plenty of reasons to hope it wouldn't. The first corridor turned left into a second corridor, and Penn, leading the way, stopped suddenly.
"Kyber!" he hissed.
A pair of gnome hunters was coming toward them from out of the mix of light and shadows, spears resting on their shoulders, heads lowered in conversation. Their attentions on each other, they had not yet seen the boy and the elven girl.
"Keep moving," she whispered,
giving Pen a push.
Don't say anything when we pass. Keep your head lowered.
They walked toward the gnomes at a steady pace, Kyber moving over to place herself between Pen and the guards, shielding him. She looked right through the gnomes as they passed, a druid preoccupied with more important things. It had the desired effect. The gnomes, in turn, looked right through her. Seconds later, they were alone again. Pen turned them onto a broad stairway that wound upward into the keep, and they began to climb. As they did so, the sound of voices reached them for the first time, coming from somewhere above. Kyber took Pen's arm to keep him moving. Hesitation was the enemy. At the top of the stairs, the corridor divided, one branch continuing on, the other angling left. A pair of druids stood conversing not a dozen yards away, heads bent close, sharing possession of a book that one held, while the other slowly paged through. The two gave Pen and Kyber only a cursory glance, and Pen turned down the corridor that ran left.
"It's not far now," he whispered.
Kyber nodded, feeling a renewed sense of trepidation. This would not be as easy as it seemed. There would be guards, probably watching over the dark wand, but certainly warding the sleeping chambers of the Ard Ris. They would have to get past those guards and do so without a fight. How would they manage that? There wasn't time to think it through. They were down the corridor, around a corner, and moving towards several gnome hunters stationed at the foot of a narrow staircase leading up into the highest reaches of the keep. For an instant, Kyber considered turning back, withdrawing to a place where they could talk this through and decide how best to proceed. But it was already too late for that. The gnomes had seen them coming and were turning toward them.
"The Dark Wand is up those stairs," Pen said quietly, sealing their fate. "In the chamber of the Ard Ris."
Two of the gnome hunters moved forward to intercept them, one holding up his hand to slow their approach.
"No one is allowed in this part of the keep," he rumbled,
speaking to them in a fractured Southland dialect. Kyber stopped in front of him.
"Trant Rowan sent for us."
The gnome hesitated.
"I wasn't told."
"Is he up there?" she asked, gesturing toward the stairs.
"He has gone to bed. Do the same and come back tomorrow when he is here."
She shook her head. "I have to leave something for him." She pointed at the stairs. "Up there." Another gnome drifted over. The three of them were staring at her. The remaining gnomes were clumped together on the far side of the hall, engaged in their own conversation and not paying much attention to the first group. It was time to act. They could break past these three, she thought. They could gain the stairs before the guards could stop them. She took a deep breath and exhaled slowly. That kind of thinking could get them killed. She gestured at the gnome.
"You can come with me if you need to make certain of what I will do. Surely you can allow me that."
The gnome had shifted his gaze to Pen and was studying him closely.
"I don't know you," he said. "You're just a boy, too young to be a druid. Why do you wear a druid robe?"
Pen straightened. "I am an apprentice in training. I am a nephew to Trant Rowan himself and not a boy." He folded his arms across his chest. "I will tell him what you said."
"Tell him what you like," the gnome grunted.
He looked back at Kyber.
"You can't go up there. Not tonight.
I have my orders."
She stared at him with an intensity that would have melted iron, knowing she had pushed matters as far as she could, that her only options now were to turn around and go back, or try to fight her way through. She glanced at Pen, saw that he was set to fight, put a hand on his shoulder to calm him, and said,
"Let's go."
She walked him back down the corridor without looking at him, silencing his protests with a quick squeeze of his shoulder, her mind racing. She wasn't about to give up, not with what was at stake.
but she needed a better approach than a straightforward attack on 6 armed gnome hunters. When she was around the corner and out of their sight, she wheeled on Pen. "Don't worry, we're going back, but we need a plan for this. It won't help if we're injured or killed, especially you. You'll have all you can do just to stay alive on the other side."
"I can manage," he said.
She gave him a long, hard look. "I have to say this before the time to say anything has run out. What you encounter inside the Forbidding will be much worse than what you've encountered here. You will be all alone, and I haven't any idea how you will protect yourself from the things imprisoned in there. I can help you. I'm not Aaron, but I do have training in the use of druid magic, enough so that I can be of use. More important, I have the elf stones. I think you should take me with you."
He shook his head.
"You know I can't do that." "I know you think you can't. I know you were told you couldn't. But maybe we need to test what you were told. The King of the Silver River has misled you more than once. You have already sacrificed yourself in ways that you weren't expecting. What might you be expected to sacrifice this time? Maybe I can keep that from happening."
"No, Kyber," he said firmly. His mouth tightened into a thin line.
"If you come with me, if you even can, no one will ever know what has happened to either one of us if I fail. But if you stay behind, you might be able to change things without me. You might find a different way to help, a better way."
She snorted. "There is no other way. You know that."
"No, I don't. I don't know anything.
Neither do you. We're still learning what's possible." He paused.
"I do know this much. The staff and I are bonded in a way that makes it very clear to me that in this one instance, at least, the King of the Silver River was right. I have to go alone. No one else is going to be allowed to go with me."
She stared at him.
"You are so stubborn, Pendaren."
"You should know, Kyber. Who is more stubborn than you?"
"I wish you would change your mind."
She folded her arms and waited, then gave him a cryptic nod. "Just remember not to put yourself in danger needlessly. Remember to be patient when you come up against things you can't get past. Don't be reckless, Pen. You are sometimes. But you can't be in there."
She waited on his response.
"I know," he said.
"You say it, but I'm not sure you mean it."
His lips tightened.
"I mean it. I know what it will be like. I know it will be bad. But I have to think I have a chance, or the King of the Silver River wouldn't be sending me in the first place. Maybe the Dark Wand will help protect me. In any case, I promise to be careful, Kyber. You'd do better to worry about yourself. You won't be much better off than me."
He was right.
She would be alone in the Druid's Keep with no way out. She would be in as much danger as he was. She put that matter aside. There was nothing either of them could do about what lay ahead.
"Are you ready?"
"Are you?"
"Don't know."
"Do you have a plan, Kyber?"
"Just stick close."
With Pen at her shoulder, she moved back to the bend in the corridor and stopped just out of sight of the gnome hunters. She glanced both ways to be certain they were alone, then summoned magic in the form of a spark of light no larger than a firefly. It flared to life, then danced in the palm of her hand. She held it for a moment, looked at Pen to be certain he was ready, then stepped out into the hallway and threw the spark at the gnomes. The spark flew down the corridor so quickly that it was on them before they knew what it was. One or two had just enough time to glance up before the spark exploded in a ball of fiery light that consumed them. But nothing burned. Instead, weapons, armor, iron stays, and clasps were turned to magnets that locked together instantly, becoming a clutch of metal pieces, pulling all 6 guards into a struggling heap.
"Now!"
Kyber hissed, yanking Pen out of the shadows. They raced for the stairway,
black robes flying out behind them, watching as the pile of hapless gnome hunters rolled and thrashed about the floor, trying to free themselves from one another. One or two saw the pair run by and yelled in warning, but could not do anything about it. Before even one of them had regained his feet, Kyber and Penn were past them and racing up the stairs. By the time they reached the upper floor, Penn was leading the way, flying up the steps and across the floor as he turned down the hall. Rounding the corner of the stairwell, Kyber glanced back over her shoulder. No one was following, but the guards were cursing and screaming, and the sporadic flash of her entangling magic revealed that it was still holding them fast. Help would arrive quickly, though. She ran after Penn, who was pulling futilely at the iron handles of a pair of wooden doors that were carved with intricate symbols. "Locked!" he screamed in frustration. Kyber pulled him aside, took a moment to study the locks, found the magic that bound them too much for her, and stepped back, motioning Penn behind her. Using a skill Aaron had taught her long ago, she attacked the fastenings on the hinges, where the securing magic was weakest, loosening the bolts that held them, ripping free the outer stays. In moments, the doors had collapsed in a thunderous crash, giving them access to the room beyond. They rushed into the chamber, Penn wheeling left and right, desperately searching for the missing staff. "Kyber, I don't see it." "There," she said, pointing toward the ceiling. The staff hung suspended from a hook, threaded through with ropes of magic, bound securely in place and out of reach. "Can you get it down?" the boy pleaded. She shook her head. She could feel her heart pounding as desperation flooded through her. "The magic is too strong for me, too complex. I'm not skilled enough to break it." In frustration, he leaped for the staff, snatching at it with both hands. As he did so, the runes glowed like bits of fire, as if live coals were embedded in the polished wood. They were responding to his efforts to reach them, anxious for him to succeed. "Penn, stop!" she exclaimed. "Let's try something." She positioned herself beneath the dark wand, locked her hands together in front of her, palms up, to form a cup, then said, "Step into my hands and I'll boost you up. Grab one end of the staff, and whatever happens, don't let go." He did as she asked, waiting until she had braced herself, then stepping into her locked fingers. He was much heavier than he looked, and it took all her strength to boost him up and then hold him in place as he groped for the staff. "I have it!" he shouted after what seemed an endless amount of time. She released him with a gasp and left him dangling from the ceiling, both hands holding on to the staff. The runes were burning so fiercely, it looked as if the wood might spontaneously ignite. But Penn did not seem to feel any pain, and the threads that secured the staff were beginning to shimmer and lose their brightness. "It's weakening, Penn! It's giving way!" There was a flurry of movement, and the sound of boots in the hallway beyond. She whirled, summoned her magic almost without thinking, and turned it on a rush of gnome hunters who suddenly appeared in the gap where the doors used to be. A burst of wind materialized right in front of them, a huge gust that caught them up and sent them tumbling back down the hallway in a jumble of grunts and cries. Behind her, in the face of the talisman's need to serve Penn, the magic that chained the dark wand failed, and the boy crashed to the floor. He scrambled up again almost at once. "It worked, Kyber," he exclaimed, beaming with excitement. "Go," she told him, gesturing. "Do what you have to, but go now, they're coming." She turned back to the doorway, stepped to the opening, and sent another gust of wind sweeping down the hall toward the gnome hunters and a single black-cloaked druid who had joined them. When she glanced over her shoulder, Penn was running his hands up and down the staff as the glowing runes radiated spears of brilliance that chased back the darkness in all directions and surrounded the boy in a halo of fire.
"It's working, Kyber," he shouted. "I can feel something pulling at me." She wasn't sure what he meant, or even if he understood what was actually happening, but she couldn't do anything to help him in any case. Her attention reverted to the hallway, where something new was developing. A regrouping was taking place just out of her line of sight. She stepped to one side of the opening, trying to find shelter. She scanned the torch-lit darkness beyond their refuge, searching for movement, readying herself for whatever was coming. "Hurry, Penderin!" There was no response. When she glanced back to see what he was doing, he was gone.
"Good luck,"
she whispered. In the next instant, something that might have been a huge fist slammed into her and sent her flying backwards through the last of the fading streaks of light from the Dark Wand's runes. All the breath went out of her as she struck the far wall and collapsed in a stunned heap.
"Use the elf stones," she thought, fumbling through her clothing for them.
Then the fist struck her again, exploding out of the darkness of the corridor through the gap in the wall, hammering her back a second time. She fell away from the blow like a rag doll, and all the light and sound went out of the world. Chapter 10. In a second, much darker world, in a stronger, more heavily warded keep, in a place and time where life was measured by the thickness of sinew and iron, and the durability of hope was as ephemeral as mist, another attempt at escape was hanging by a thread. Grianne Ormsford lay motionless on the floor of her cell, a ragged, broken creature, listening to the sounds of an approaching goblin's heavy breathing. The guard it had come to relieve was dead, and in its place, sitting cloaked and hooded not 10 feet from her cell door, was Weka Dart. Her would-be rescuer and the one creature in that wretched world who had demonstrated any compassion for her. He was also her betrayer, and a liar of such monstrous proportions that it was impossible for her to know his intentions from one moment to the next. Grianne Ormsford, Ard Rhys of the Third Druid Order, had been reduced to a place in life where reliance on betrayers and liars was the best she could expect. How she had come to that end was still something of a mystery, although she knew the identities of those responsible. She knew, too, what was at stake, and it tethered her sanity and resourcefulness directly to a driving need to get clear of the dungeons and find her way back to her own world. But once the goblin caught sight of the poorly concealed Weka Dart, which it surely must, the alarm would be given, and her last hope of ever escaping would be ended. She could not let that happen. Whatever her misgivings about the Ulk Bog, however uncertain his loyalty, he remained her one chance. Her expectations were reduced to little more than gambling on the mercurial nature of a creature she barely understood. It would have to be enough. Weka Dart would have to do. She stirred. Deliberately drawing the goblin's attention, it turned toward her, hearing her scuffling sounds, her whimpers, her sudden gasps. Watching her attempts to rise from the floor on which she had lain by then for the better part of 3 days, it grunted something at her, taking hold of the bars to the cell, leaning forward and peering in. She was an amusement that could keep it entertained during the long hours ahead, a curiosity to be enjoyed and perhaps even teased. She could see it in the goblin's eyes. She could read it in the look on its face. Then a shadow slipped behind the gnarled figure, swift as smoke on wind, and the goblin inhaled sharply as a knife blade thrust through its throat and pinned it against the bars. Weka Dart
held the goblin in place until it was limp, then dropped it on the dungeon floor and kicked the body aside.
"They should all go the same way," the Alkbog hissed.
There was a look in his eyes that Grianne hadn't seen before and wasn't sure she wanted to see again. She pushed herself off the floor and limped over to the cell door. Her mouth was dry and her head was pounding. Her vision was blurred from too many days of no food and water and no real sleep. She was still impacted by her ordeal with the Furies, her impulses still governed by her need to be one with them, to mule and spit and snarl. She fought those impulses, but the effort was debilitating. "Open the door, Wekedart," she snapped at him. "Let me out. Hurry." She did not mean her words to sound so urgent, did not intend to appear so desperate, but her needs overpowered her intentions, and the truth escaped before she could contain it. She would do anything to escape. She would give anything to distance herself from the horror she had endured as the Straken Lord's prisoner. But instead of opening the door, Wekedart glanced sharply at her, an uncertain look in his yellow eyes. "What are you waiting for?" she snapped. "Do you have a way to free me or not? Is our bargain still good? Will you honor it as you have said you would?"
"Our bargain is not complete," he growled.
He reached into his pocket and produced an iron key, holding it up for her to see.
"My end of the bargain is here, the key to your cell door. I can take off the conjure collar as well. But what of your end of the bargain? What of the service I require of you?"
"Forgiveness? You already have that. I told you that by telling me the truth. You have gained that forgiveness. I don't want revenge on you. I won't harm you when I'm free. You have my word." His strange, wizened face scrunched down further on itself, and the yellow eyes glittered.
"Your forgiveness was the price for my truth. That bargain is made and done. This bargain is new, Grianne of the Straken Lord's jails. If I give you your freedom from this cell and from the collar, you must give me what I need in return."
She stared at him, realizing suddenly that he had failed to reveal as yet his reasons for coming back. Coming to her aid was not something the little Alkbog would do out of the kindness of his heart. He had abandoned her, cast her off as useless to him when she had refused to allow him to lead her where he wanted, which was right where she had ended up anyway. But he had lost his chance at reinstatement as catcher with Tail Riverine, a loss that left him homeless and shunned. He had come back because he expected her to do something about it. "I can't give you anything," she told him. "It isn't within my power to give you anything."
"Ah, Straken, you underestimate yourself. You are exactly the one who can help me, and it is for that reason that I will help you. A favor for a favor. I don't want much. I don't want anything more than what you want for yourself. Freedom. From these prisons and from this world. I want you to take me with you."
"Take me with you?" She stared at him. "Take him out of the forbidding," he meant. "Take him back with her into her own world. Voluntarily release a creature that had been locked away by the fairy world since before the dawn of mankind."
"You want to come with me?"
she asked him, still not certain she was hearing him right.
"You want to leave the forbidding and come back with me into my world?"
He licked his lips and nodded eagerly.
When you find a way to get free, you must free me as well. I know that you were brought here against your wishes. I know that you are trapped. But I have seen what you can do. I think that you know a way back, or if you do not, that you will find one. I have seen how resourceful you are, much more so than any other Straken I have ever encountered. You may be a match for Tail Riverine himself.
I am a match for no one, she countered. I don't know if I can help you. I don't know if I should. He bristled at her words, stepping back from the cell door and hissing at her like a snake.
Then I don't know why I'm wasting my time. I don't know why I bothered coming here at all. You would rather stay in this cell than escape back into your own world? You would rather die here? Better that than help someone like me? Is that what you are saying? That I'm not worthy of your efforts? That I don't deserve your help?
He spit at her.
Free yourself, then!
He wheeled and started to walk away. It took everything she had to refrain from calling out to him, from begging him to come back to her, but if he thought she needed him more than he needed her, she would be in his power, and that was a price she could not afford to pay. He was halfway down the hall when he wheeled about, his face contorting in fury.
"I came back for you!"
he screamed so loudly that she jumped in spite of herself.
I risked everything to come back for you. I came to save you, and now you won't help me. One little thing I ask of you, Straken. One tiny little thing.
He came rushing back down the hall, sobbing uncontrollably, his shoulders shaking.
Nothing. For someone with your power. Nothing. Why won't you do it?
She took a deep breath.
I can't be sure of my power here. I can't be sure of what it will do. What if taking you out of the forbidding is more than I can manage?
He shook his head slowly from side to side, as if her words made no sense.
Don't you understand, Grianne of the Cat Sounds? I was driven from my tribe for eating my children. They will never take me back. No Ulk Bog door will ever be open to me again. Losing the protection of Tail Riverine closed every other door as well. Now, all creatures are my enemies. I am shunned by everything that breathes. I have nowhere to go, and no one who will take me in. Better I was dead than to try to live like this.
But why bother with me, Wekadart? She pressed. If you just wait, won't this demon that Tail Riverine has dispatched to my world break down the forbidding and free you anyway?
Free me from what?
He screamed at her.
Free me from one prison so that I can go into another? Free me from one world in which I am outcast, so that I can be outcast in another? I don't want the Straken Lord to succeed. I don't want the forbidding destroyed. If your world becomes like the world of the Jarkarus, what difference will it make whether I escape into it or not?
He pushed his face up against the bars.
You can help me, Straken. If I can help you, surely you can help me. How hard can it be for someone like you to give me what I want?
In truth, she didn't know. What would it take to escape the forbidding? Was the boy foreseen by the shade of the warlock lord real? Was he coming to set her free? Or was the prophecy a cruel trick? She couldn't be certain, but it was the only hope she had. The shade of Bronna had not lied about the truth behind the reason she had been sent into the world of the Jarkarus. Wekadart had confirmed that. She was here so that a demon could be free, a demon that would destroy the wall of the forbidding. If Bronna's shade had told the truth about that, then it might well have been telling the truth about the mysterious boy. So she must gamble on the words of a monster. She must accept the possibility that her only chance for escape was through the coming of a boy she didn't know. It didn't seem to her that Weka Dart's hopes for escape were any less realistic than her own. While she did not relish setting the Elk Bog free in her world, it would be infinitely worse to refuse his bargain if it meant that she must stay imprisoned as well. "If you release me," she said, "I will try to find a way out of the world of the Jarkaroos and back to my own world. If it is within my power to do so, I will take you with me. I can promise you nothing more."
"I have your word?"
"You do." She held up one cautionary finger. "But remember, I don't know yet that I can find a way back for either of us. I don't know that I can save us, even if you set me free. I don't know that I can find a way to stop the Morik from destroying the Forbidding. I don't know that." He was already working the key to her cell into the lock.
"You will find a way. I know you will."
He released her from the cell, then used a second, smaller key to unlatch the conjure collar. Stepping back, he handed her the collar, his wizened face bright with pleasure.
"I kept my keys to the cells and the collars from my days as catcher," he said to her. "Tail Riverine never suspected I would dare to do such a thing."
"He has misjudged us both," she said. She cast the collar aside. She would never wear such a thing again, or ever again be anyone's slave. "How do we get past all the guards and their demon wolves?" she asked, as they stood facing each other in the empty hall. He grinned, all his teeth showing.
"We won't go that way. That way is death. We will go another way, a way I know that few others do. It is how I got into Crawl Reach to find you in the first place. I know secrets, little Straken. I know many secrets."
She didn't doubt him, but she refrained from saying anything, gesturing for him to lead the way. She was weak from her imprisonment and lack of nourishment, and she was already wondering how far she could go before her strength failed completely. She had no idea how long she had lain semi-comatose in her delusional state in that cell, but it had to have been days. During that time, she had not eaten or drunk anything that she could remember. She had barely slept, suspended between sleeping and waking, beset by dreams and dark imaginings, still caught up in the subterfuge she had used to survive her ordeal in the Arena of the Furies. Some part of her was still there, she knew, amid the cat things, unable to quite let go of the identity of the creature she had pretended so hard to be. Her magic was a powerful thing, and when it was employed as she had employed it in the arena, she could do or be anything. But the after effects were equally powerful and tended to cling to her psyche like the damp leavings of a sweat brought on by nightmares. She was Grianne Ohmsford again. She was Ard Rhys of the Third Druid Order once more. But she was also the Ill's Witch, and the things the Ill's Witch could become. She had opened a door she had kept carefully closed for more than 20 years, and she was not sure what it would take to close it again. They went down a corridor lined with doors that opened into cells like her own, some of them empty, some of them become containers for piles of bones and small lumps at which she chose not to look too closely. The corridor was silent and musty and empty of life. She heard Weka Dart's breathing and the scrapes of his boots, but her own passage was soundless, a wraith's passage through darkest night. The corridor ended at a set of narrow steps leading up, but Weka Dart took her into the shadows behind the stairs where a rusted iron door was seated in the stone. He worked its ancient latch back and forth, a slow creaking in the deep silence, and at last the door opened into a wall of blackness.
"Very dark down here,"
the Alk Bog announced solemnly. He reached into the blackness to produce a torch, stuck its pitch-coated tip into the flames of one already lit in the corridor behind them, and caught it aflame. He gave the fire a moment to spread, then grinned at her once more and led the way forward. She followed him down into the earth, down stairs eroded by centuries of footsteps and moisture, into depths so frigid that the cold cut right to the bone. The tunnels they traversed smelled of old damp and raw metal, and at times she saw what looked like frost on the rock, but was in fact patches of lichen that glowed with a strange, bright radiance. Wekedart's torch burned with smoky insistence, clogging the air with its distinctive smell, causing her to cough, and finally forcing her to breathe through the sleeve of her tunic. There was no ventilation in the tunnels, and the smell of burning pitch trailed after them like a marker. If anyone thought to look for them down there, they would not have a hard time tracking them, she thought. Wekedart pressed on as if pursuit were not a concern, glancing back at her now and then to be certain she was keeping up, as if fearful he might lose her in the dark. Indeed, it wasn't an altogether unrealistic concern. She was already having trouble keeping up with him, even absent his tendency to roam as he had earlier in their travels. Her head ached from the cold and smoke, and her body was fatigued and shaky. She wished she had looked for something to eat or drink, but she had not even thought of that, so anxious had she been to get clear of the cells, in truth. She had not eaten or drunk in any reasonable way since she had come into the forbidding, and the gradual erosion of her energy was finally making itself felt. Time passed, more than she could keep track of, and the trek through the tunnels beneath Kral Reach wore on. Clearly determined to take them through as swiftly as possible, Wekedart did not stop or even slow. From time to time, he retrieved a fresh torch from a crevice she would have passed by without even seeing, lighting it from the old one so that they could continue. Their passage wound down crude steps cut into the stone, along narrow, twisting corridors in which they were forced to stoop, and through caves thick with stalactites dripping with mineral-rich water. After a time, the air warmed a bit, and Grianne stopped shivering. The floor of the tunnels began to rise. They were moving back toward the surface. But still their journey continued, with no end in sight. Finally, as they were passing through yet another cavern, she stumbled and fell. She lay where she had fallen, her vision blurred, and her muscles aching, too tired to rise.
"Are you hurt, Straken?"
Wekedart asked, trying in vain to pull her back to her feet. "I'm exhausted," she told him. "I have to rest." He shook his head.
"It is not safe here."
"I don't care. I have to rest." She crawled along the floor of the cavern to an open space where she could stretch out. She was breathing so hard that the wheeze filled the silence of the cavern, frightening her with its intensity. Her head was spinning, and she felt as if all the strength had left her body. "Do you have anything to eat?" He produced a tuber of some sort, which she ate without questioning its strange taste, then accepted the water he produced from a gourd tucked in his clothing. She was beyond caring about the source of the offerings, beyond caring about anything but taking nourishment and going to sleep.
"I have traveled through these caverns often," he advised,
glancing around at the darkness. He sat cross-legged before her and wedged the torch upright between two stones.
"That's why I know where torches can be found to light the way. Most of them I put there. I used these passages to leave the keep, undetected when I was catcher for Tail Riverine. Sometimes secrecy was best."
He shrugged.
Of course, these tunnels are home to things you don't want to take chances with. That is why I said it is dangerous. We don't have to worry, though. I know what they are and how to avoid them. Mostly. Some are very large. Some very small. Some have no eyes. They have been down here so long. Some are things no one but me has ever seen.
Her breathing had steadied enough that she could respond.
This whole world is filled with things I have never seen.
I suppose that's so.
He thought for a moment, rubbing his fingers across his wrinkled features.
I will not be sad to leave this world,
he said suddenly.
I will be happy to leave.
She nodded, saying nothing.
I was never meant to be here.
He shook his head emphatically.
I was born into this world, but it was a mistake. I should have been born into yours. If I had been, I would not have done the things I did. I would not have eaten my young. I would not have been a catcher for Tail Riverine. I would have done something important.
He smiled, showing off a frightening display of teeth.
I will be much better when I am living in your world, Grianne of the kind and gentle heart. I will serve you. I will be your friend and helper. Whatever you need me to do, I will do it. I am good at many things. I can find anything. That is why I was such a good catcher. That is why I was able to find you both times. Nothing escapes me once I set my mind to finding it. It is a gift, and I am lucky to have it.
I have to sleep, she said.
When I am in your world, I will not do bad things, he continued, apparently not hearing. I will not eat things I shouldn't or hurt those I care about. I will work hard. I will become your most trusted companion because I know how important that is.
I have never had anyone I could trust before. I have not even had a friend. In the world of the Jarkarus, friends are hard to find. Mostly we have alliances with those we protect or who protect us. Everything hunts or is hunted. It is not safe to have friends.
She was stretched out on the ground now, barely aware of what he was saying. She felt his hand touch her arm.
But you are my friend, little Straken. We are friends, you and I. We shall always be friends.
A moment later, she was asleep. She dreamed of dark creatures and long chases, of being hunted relentlessly, of each pursuit ending in a fall that segued into the next. She never knew exactly where she was. She never knew what it was that was after her. She caught shadowy glimpses of her surroundings and of the things that hunted her, but both changed shape and size so often that she could identify neither. She woke groggy and out of sorts with Weka Dart shaking her.
"Wake up, little Straken,"
he hissed.
"Something's coming."
She could hear the fear in his voice, and it brought her all the way awake. What is it?
A Gromph. A cave worm.
He glanced over his shoulder quickly, then back at her.
There hasn't been one in these tunnels for years. They live deeper underground. You don't see them ever here. But this one scents us. It comes.
She scrambled to her feet, still unsteadily, still aching and worn. She took a moment to gather her thoughts and test her balance. What should we do? His teeth showed in a glistening line.
Run from it! If it catches us, we will be eaten. Have you ever seen a cave worm? Very big. Not afraid of anything. I saw one destroy an entire company of goblins once. There was nothing left but their armor and their weapons when it had finished feasting on them. Come!
She didn't require any further urging. Weka Dart was already moving away with the torch, and she hurried after him. They cleared the cavern and plunged into a fresh set of tunnels, but they were going back down into the earth again, and she realized that the Ulk Bog had been forced to alter their escape route to avoid the Gromph. She guessed there was nothing she could do about that, but she wasn't sure how she would hold up if the detour proved lengthy.
Her headache and sense of disorientation had returned. The food, water, and sleep had helped, but she was not yet herself. Behind her, something huffed powerfully, like an angry bull or an explosion of steam, only much, much louder.
"This thing is big?" she asked, panting.
"Very big."
"Then it can't get down into these smaller tunnels, can it? We should be safe."
She saw the glint of his eyes in the torchlight as he glanced back at her.
"Gromps can squeeze themselves down to a quarter of their size to get through small spaces. We are not safe anywhere, Straken."
They hurried on, not at running speed, but perhaps at half, which was dangerous enough under the circumstances. Even with the torchlight to guide them, the way was treacherous, strewn with knobs and depressions, spits in the rock floor, outcroppings and occasional drops. Running was dangerous, but easier for the Ulk Bog than for her. She did not possess his agility or his strength. With her balance already uncertain, she soon found herself unable to keep up.
"Wicca Dart!" she called to him. "Not so fast!"
As if in response, the Gromps, huffing, burst out of the darkness behind her in a wave so unexpectedly loud that she almost screamed. It was much nearer, rapidly closing the distance between them. Wicca Dart rushed back to her and seized her arm.
"If it catches us, Grianne of the clever tricks, I have no weapons with which to fight it. Can you bring your Straken magic to bear?"
In truth, she didn't know. She hadn't tried to use her magic since the ordeal with the Furies, and she wasn't sure what part of it would respond in her present condition.
"Keep running," she said, pushing him ahead.
They cleared the narrower tunnel and emerged into a broader one, its ceiling fully 20 feet high. Ahead, the walls opened wider still, the beginnings of another cavern. There was movement behind them now, a kind of sibilant scraping that suggested something heavy and slick. The huffing was all around them, the sound of breathing, heavy and anxious. They ran on through the broader tunnel to the entrance to the cavern, and then she grabbed Wicca Dart's arm and pulled him around.
"We'll make a stand here."
She was played out. She had nothing left. She pushed him behind her, then summoned her druid magic.
It would not come.
It resisted her call, locked away deep down inside her where it refused to budge. She had not had that happen since she was little and in training with the Morgor during the early years of her life as the Ill's Witch. In the darkness of the tunnels they had just come through, the Gromph was moving rapidly, sensing their presence. For a moment, she panicked.
"Straken!"
Wicca Dart hissed suddenly, thrusting the torch at her.
"Use this! It cannot see in the light. Gromps live in the dark and never see the sun. Perhaps this torch—"
"Keep it!"
she snapped at him, furious with the interruption, her concentration completely broken.
"Use it yourself if it gets past me."
She resumed her efforts at summoning the magic, burrowing down inside herself, breaking down barriers one by one. It was her fear of becoming a fury again that most resisted her efforts. That fear closed about her as she worked to reach her recalcitrant magic. It threatened to make her lose control completely. She understood its power. She would do anything to avoid becoming a fury again, anything to escape the terrible madness that becoming one of the cat creatures would cause. If she was to do it again, she did not think she could reverse the effects. The madness would claim her, and she would be lost. That fear permeated everything about her need to call up the magic, and she could not seem to separate it out.
"Straken!"
cried Wicca Dart. Writhing and twisting, the Gromph burst from the darkness of the smaller tunnel. It was a huge insect-like creature, covered with bony plates that gleamed with an oily lubricant. Mandibles clicked at the center of its flat, featureless head, and short, spiky legs ended in huge claws that supported its narrow, reticulated body. It seemed to grow larger right before her eyes, and the forward part of its body lifted right off the cave floor, filling the tunnel with its bulk, undulating as it advanced on them. As she fought to bring magic to bear, Wekadart lost control, whether from fear or impatience, or out of desperation too overpowering to resist, he gave way. With a terrifying howl, he burst past her, waving the torch wildly at the Gromph, sparks flying from the flaming brand in long crimson streamers. The Ulk Bog went right at the monster, a bothersome gnat waiting to be crushed. The Gromph made the familiar huffing sound, then jerked back from its tiny attacker, clearly bothered by the presence of the light from the torch. "No, don't!" Grian screamed. Wekadart was right underneath the monster, rushing it and then backing quickly away, waving the torch as if it had magical powers, howling as if he were the magician who could make them come alive. In that instant, driven by her fear for the little Ulk Bog and her rage at her own impotence, she broke down the last of her resistance to the summoning of her magic. She smashed through her hesitancy and her reticence, tore down her fears and doubts, wrenched the magic free, and brought it to bear. The Wish Song, its blood heritage both a blessing and a curse to generations of her family, but to no one so much so as to herself, surfaced like a tidal wave.
"Release me."
Terrified by its unexpected force, by the immensity of it, she fought to contain it. The magic's powerful response was something new, entirely different. It roiled inside her like the winds of a storm, breaking down everything in its path, threatening massive destruction. She clutched at herself with both hands, trying to contain it, to keep it inside until she could control it. For she had no more control over this than she had over her fury self. She was enveloped. She was consumed.
"Release me."
She could not stop it. The magic exploded out of her, responding instinctively to her needs. It swept through the dark and the damp like a hammer, slamming into the Gromph, striking it with such force that the creature was lifted off its crooked legs and thrown back against the rock of the tunnel walls. The result was instantaneous and devastating. The Gromph didn't merely collapse on impact. It shattered. Armor plates, legs, and body parts flew everywhere until all that remained were bits and pieces that twitched with slow, jerking movements in the faint light of Wekadart's flickering torch. Then, the magic simply faded until no trace of it remained. Drained of her strength, and stunned by her body's response to the magic's implacable surge, Grianne Ormsford sank to her knees. The wish song had come out of her with more power than she had ever experienced. It was as if she had been storing it away for weeks on end, had accumulated and hoarded it, waiting for just that moment to set it free. The wish song had been put to the test countless times over the years, but she had never seen it respond that way. What had happened to make it do so? Wekadart was standing before her, wizened face bright with unrestrained exultation and wild-eyed glee. Holding out the torch in a kind of salute, he bent his head in crude submission.
"Draken Queen,"
he whispered, the awe in his voice unmistakable.
"Yours is the greatest power. Yours is the supreme magic. I bow to you. I salute you. You have no equal.
She closed her eyes against what she was feeling and made no response. She did not pretend to know if the extent of her power was as vast as it appeared, but she knew without question that it was strong enough to have revealed their presence to the Straken Lord, and that he would be there quickly enough to test it for himself. Chapter 11. When the rune-carved length of the dark wand began to glow, Pen could sense a shift in place and time almost immediately. It was an odd feeling, a suggestion of movement that felt like a small tremor in the earth coupled with a subtle progression of light toward dark. He knew immediately that the magic was in play and the dark wand was responding to his silent plea for help. There was nothing earth-shaking about it, nothing overtly dramatic or astounding, just a hint of things being altered. He had time to glance once at Kyber, who faced the opening where the doors to the Ard Reese's sleeping chamber had stood before she collapsed them, her body rigid with concentration, her arms lifted and her fingers extended to meet whatever challenge might appear. He regretted abandoning her to so many enemies, hated himself for it, after everything she had done for him. But there was no time or way to act on it. She had accepted the consequences of her fate by agreeing to bring him there, knowing what must happen. What he could do best for her was what he could do best for them both. Cross over into the Forbidding, find the Ard Reese, and bring her back into the Four Lands. It happened quickly after that. The runes caught fire beneath his fingers, and the staff turned bright with their glow. Then, the glow was all around him, enveloping him, shutting him away from his surroundings. The room and Kyber disappeared. He closed his eyes, hands tightening on the staff, praying that he would be strong enough to do what was needed.